So I was wondering how... There we are. Thank you. That's good. So I was wondering how many people are new to meditation? Any hands?
Yes, just one there.
Just one. Ah, right. Oh, that's not so many, actually. That's good to see that people have quite a bit of experience. And, oh, hello.
Two nights, that's good.
It is a good thing for if you've made New Year's resolutions. It's a good thing to do, you know, meditation, to cultivate a practice, a regular practice. However much you do, even if it's only 5 minutes, if you notice, I notice actually, what a difference 5 minutes can make. You know, and it's important at the end of every meditation, no matter how small, just to notice how you feel. And then that will encourage you, you know, usually. That's how you might think, well, that was a waste. But usually, no matter how much thinking has been going on, compared to before, we've slowed down, we've become more peaceful, we're more mindful than we were before. So it's always beneficial, the meditation. You know, at work or wherever you find yourself, you can even go to the toilet and spend 5 minutes in there so you can have a break. And it can be very helpful, especially when, you know, situations are difficult. If there's stress, if there is some upset, there's been some difficult exchange, you know, somebody said something, somebody's done something, always good, you know, to calm down and get centered and calm yourself down. So it's very useful. And we're very lucky to be able to meditate in a group is a real plus. Do many of you meditate at home? All right, that's quite a lot. That's really good, isn't it? Do you notice the difference between meditating at home and meditating here?
Mm-hmm.
Righto. And do you find being here a support?
Easily.
Yeah, easily, yes. It's extraordinary. Why is that? I don't really know, actually. Somehow the energy does support us when we meditate together. And it's always a plus if we can meditate in a group. And it's not many places you can. So this is a very, very good opportunity for us all, actually. I enjoy the meditation together too. Because, as I said, as Rachel said, I live in a cave. It's really a rock overhang on the side of a mountain in Sri Lanka on my own. So it's quite a... You know, I don't get to meditate with other people. Mammals, yes, monkeys and whatnot, but not with other people very often. So I enjoy it too. I get a lot out of it as well. So we're very fortunate. I always like to start the meditation by using an image for meditation. And this will be the theme that I will use this evening. See how you like it. I liken meditation to... like cleaning a jewel. We might find a jewel and it's covered with mud and all this muck, and meditation is like cleaning that jewel, because the one of my teachers, actually Ayakema, she used to say we have a jewel of a mind. For many of us, it's not a jewel of a mind, is it? But it can be. And this is what meditation points you to. You realize there can be incredible peace, incredible happiness, and self-sufficiency, contentment within. And this is when you, and wisdom, this is when you realize, yes, this is a jewel. Because, you know, we often look for happiness, we look for these things in the world outside ourselves. But in actual fact, where all our happiness, all our contentment is coming from is within the mind. And that's actually where what gets enlightened is not the body, is the mind. So this is a, as Ayakema used to call it, she was a famous German Buddhist nun. And she had a very good way of teaching, very clear, very much like Ajahn Brahm, actually. And she used to call it a jewel of a mind. So I hope all of us at some time will be able to experience this jewel of a mind. We know the mind, I know, and I'm sure you know very well, the mind with all this rubbish and all this extra stuff, the mud and the debris surrounding it. And this, in this simile, in this example, that's sort of like the defilements of our minds, the negativities of our minds. And in Buddhism we call them, you often call it like greed, hatred and delusion. That's the roots, they say, of all these negative things. And basically, It's the that state of mind that goes out looking for happiness in the things we like in the world. And then the other state of mind, which is negative, rejecting, upset with, anxious, depressed about things in the world. And the delusion that I spoke of, that's just confusion, that doesn't really know what's going on, doesn't really know things, as the Buddha said, as they actually are. And this is the job of wisdom, actually, to know what things as they actually are. So, I thought I'd give you, this is going to be a bit unusual for you, but I'd give you a quote from the Buddha. So this is very, very, I like this very much, actually. And this brings up what I'm talking about, this jewel of the mind, the theme for this evening, which will tie into the meditation as well. Ah, actually, talking of which, we need a clock. So this is what the Buddha said. He says, luminous, this is like radiant or brilliant, amongst is this mind, but it is defiled by defilements that visit from outside. The uninstructed person does not understand this as it really is. Therefore, I say, for the uninstructed person, there is no development of the mind. And then the opposite. Luminous, monks, is this mind, and it is freed from the defilements that visit from outside. The instructed, noble disciple understands this as it is. Therefore, I say, for the instructed, noble disciple, there is development of the mind. And some of you may be wondering, what's that about? You may be wondering. But it's actually quite important because what it's pointing to, the fact is that the mind, our minds, are essentially luminous. And what does luminous mean? It means that it's pure, it's bright, it's clear. And that the things that we suffer from, you know, the negative states of mind that come, are only visitors. They're not permanent guests, well, not permanent aspects of our mind. Because many people, don't they? They think that those negative parts, the jealousy, the irritation, the anger, the anxiety, the depression, the greed, the addictive behavior, whatever, they think that's them. They're stuck with it. But here the Buddha is saying, no, the mind is luminous. Its essential nature is to be clear, bright, pure. And when I think of that, I always think of the image, and I like this experience actually, and you've probably all had it too, when you take off in an aeroplane and it's really grey, overcast, and really, you know, it looks really gloomy is the word, yes, gloomy, and you go up and the plane goes through the clouds, what do you see? Nothing but blue skies and just this huge space. It's just, and this, I think of this as like the mind. You know, the essential nature of the mind. And there's also this aspect of light, that the mind is radiant and like light. It reminded me of a story, one of my favorite stories, of Nasruddin. Do people know who Nasruddin is? Was? Well, was he a real person? I don't know. He's a Sufi holy man, and he's a bit like one of some of these Zen monks. And one day, somebody saw Nasruddin outside his house, and he was looking. He was looking for something, and he was peering at the ground and going around. And the person said to him, "Nasruddin, what are you looking for?" And he said, "The key to the house." He said, "Oh, I'll give you a hand." So he went and was searching, looking everywhere, for this key. And then the person, after a long while, the person said, "Well, where did you drop the key? Where did you lose it?" I think that's a tricky question anyway. And he said, "Oh, inside the house." He said, "Why are you looking out here?" He said, "Ah, the light's better." But we're the same. The light outside is, of course, you know, the world that we pay a lot of attention to. But inside? We don't pay attention to inside, that there is a light there, but we don't know it. And the key, What's the key? People got any ideas? What the key? What key is he looking for? It's his house. It's happiness. We look for happiness. Where do we look for it? Out there, anywhere, you know, the shopping malls, you know, the internet, everywhere, you know. We're very familiar with that. But how familiar are we with inside, the light within? And this is where, actually, we can really come home. This is where we can really find happiness, is within. So this is an important way to look at the world. Where are our priorities, you know, outside or inside? We have to balance, actually. So I'd like to just talk a little bit about the process of meditation, especially for the new person who's come. But maybe it's a little different from what you've heard before, so it can be useful to hear again. One of the most important things to begin a meditation with is intention. It's very good to have an intention when you meditate, an idea of why you're meditating. For instance, you could have the intention to be present, to be mindful, to know clearly what's happening, to look into what's happening, you know, to be curious about what you're experiencing. And that is they are very good intentions. It's like programming the mind so that when you're continuing the meditation, it has a direction. It knows, the mind has an idea of where it's going. And we don't have to repeat it again and again, you know, be mindful, be present, or whatever. The mind will know this. We just let it do its job. And this is very important to realize. Intention is very different from expectation. You know, if we have a goal in mind, if for instance we sit in meditation, we say, I want to be in the deep meditation after half an hour. I want to have incredibly deep insight in half an hour. Is this likely to happen? No. And what will happen is we'll get disappointed and we'll probably discontinue meditation. Meditation is about creating the causes and the conditions for these things to happen, for deep meditation to happen, for deep insight to happen. We don't make it happen. It happens by itself. So our part of the process of meditating is to establish the causes, to be present, to be mindful, to be as clear and aware as we can be. So this is very useful at the beginning of the meditation, just to be very clear. If you don't do this, and I've seen it with myself, the mind will wander all over the place, you know, and one of the hindrances or other will take over, you know, you'll get drowsy and dull, or, you know, the thinking will speed up, and one will be thinking about football or cricket or whatever, you know, be off and away, or the politics or the news or whatever. So it's very important to have some sort of intention. It gives strength to the mind. And what this develops in the mind is this ability to focus. You know, not a tight, hard focus, but just to give strength to the mind, because these days, you know, with, as people are calling them these days, these weapons of mass distraction, we need as much focus as we can get. And so it's very important to have this ability to have an intention, be clear about where we're going, you know, what's our aim. And also it can develop another strength in Buddhism is determination. And this, of course, is a great strength in our lives, our daily lives too, because person who's determined, of course, is a person who'll get there, no matter what their abilities are. They will eventually get there if they're determined. So this is very important. And the next thing that this is how I do it anyway, is come into the present. So this is where this is the essence of mindfulness, isn't it? Coming into the present, letting go of the past and the future. And my simile for it, or my example of it, is turning the phone off. You know, not answering the phone of the past or the phone of the present, the telephone calls from the past, the memories, the regrets, the pleasant memories, or the telephone calls from the future. That's usually causing anxiety, or excitement can be either. So this is very important in the meditation, because This is where life actually happens. It's where meditation happens. It's where wisdom happens. It's what we know here and now that is the essence of wisdom. It's our experience. It's not something we remember from the past or we think about in the future will happen in the future. It's now. So this is very important. And it's very, for most of us, this is not easy, actually. Especially if you have children, I think you'll notice this too. The present moment is not exciting. The present moment is actually quite peaceful. And it takes an appreciation of the fact that this is quite peaceful. I've got no hassles. I've got no immediate problems, you know, the coming and from the future. And the past, just let go of it. I'm just here. You're in a peaceful oasis. And this, if you appreciate that, if you appreciate what you don't have there, you don't have all the hassles, you don't have all, you're not at work, you're not at the supermarket shopping, or you're not doing Christmas shopping, whatever it was, the worst case scenario is, you're in the present moment, and this is quite peaceful, good enough, very good actually. So this takes quite a bit of appreciation, and because of that, it's very easy for us to drift off into the past and the future. It's not exciting in the present. And I was speaking to some children recently, and they were having mindfulness taught in their school. I thought, fantastic. And the older one was very good. He said, oh, I really appreciate it. It was good. And the young one said, oh, it's boring. He said, I want to jump. And I said, well, you can jump mindfully. I think you want to jump around all the time, actually. So it must have been a bit difficult. But this is not so different from us as well. So when we appreciate the present moment, it's easier to stay in the present moment. So that's a very important element. And the next thing that I usually follow with is to scan the body, to know what's happening in the body, and to relax the body at the same time. And this is very useful too for just relaxation and for sharpening the awareness. Because when we scan the body, I mean, I notice things I never aware of generally, because you know most of our attention is outside, isn't it? We're doing this, we're saying that, and we're not aware of our bodies. So when you actually scan the body, it's like giving attention to the body that you never generally give. And in actual fact, it has great benefit because it relaxes the body, but it's also very healing for the body too, because like everything, well, like people actually, like attention, the body likes attention, and you'll notice that actually when you scan the body, that it really likes that attention, because we push it around a lot, the body, and don't pay much attention to how it really is. But the very important thing is when we do this, we get a relaxation response, and I can feel it. It's like the temperature dropping. You know, suddenly the temperature drops. It's much cooler. Suddenly you feel the body, the mind is sinking into the body. And this is part of the peaceful peace developing, actually. And in some meditation techniques, I know Ian Gawler, do you know of him in Melbourne? He's quite famous for teaching meditation, especially for people who have terminal illnesses, serious illnesses, as well as others. And with a lot of good results. But his technique is basically this. You know, to relax the relaxation response. When the body relaxes, it takes the mind with it. It goes down into a more peaceful state. So then, the next stage that I usually have is a visualization or some sort of concept to let go of any negativity in the mind. If there's still negativity in the mind or any wanting, or you know, we're thinking of things that happened in the past, or we've already let go of the past and future, but you never know. It's quite useful. So this can be many different things. You know, for instance, I teach a lot of different meditations. I use them myself. So for instance, for loving kindness meditation, I'll use the idea of a best friend, and I'll think of the qualities of a best friend, or I'll think of a best friend. And then immediately you develop this feeling, and then you can direct it towards yourself, and then you can start directing it towards others later, developing this loving kindness. This is an important meditation for all of us, actually. But this evening I'm not going to use that. I am going to use the visualization of a jewel, like I was talking about the jewel of a mind. And this, in this visualization, it's the jewel is like very multifaceted. It's got lots of light. It's brilliant. It's clear. It's pure. And it just illuminates, so it's luminous as well. And it can be whichever jewel you like, diamonds, sapphires, any of these, anything that's brilliant, and rubies. And this quality, then we can have this sort of light, we can have this sort of feeling, and then we can fill the mind with that, we can fill the body with that. And then, in this evening at least, I'll go to the breath, and we'll use that light with the breath. The reason I do this with the loving kindness and in this case with the light is that it gives the breath, it gives the meditation object much more interest. You know, it gives you a feeling. Important thing is to develop a feeling with the meditation object. If you're using something like the breath, it's fairly neutral, which is a great quality actually, because you can add anything to it to make it more interesting. And if you add this sort of perception of light, it does, it makes it more interesting, more beautiful, and you may have a feeling of like purity, of joy, of peace that can come with it. An added benefit of this visualization is, if you're very tired, anyone tired here this evening? I'm a bit tired actually this evening. If you're a bit tired, one of the antidotes is light. External light's okay, but if you can develop internal light, and it's easy actually, not that difficult, it really brightens the mind. And I find I do this and the mind gets more energy, it's more awake, more alert. So hopefully you'll find that the case too. So that is the, and usually at the end of the meditation, I encourage people to, as I said earlier, to reflect on how they feel. This is very important. Just to see, you know, very honestly, you know, if you didn't feel any benefit from it, okay, that's good. Because whatever we experience, that's what we can investigate, what we can grow from, we can learn from. Learning is the important thing. So whatever we experience, and I always say, you can't do this wrong. Whatever the result, you can work with, you can use. It's more information for us. And it's important too, at the end of the meditation, to review the meditation, to look at what we learned and what stood out for us. Because, you know, people are looking for insight, they're looking for wisdom, but they seem, we always look somewhere else, further away from ourselves. It's often these small things that we experience in meditation, which are the seeds of insight. And we can just see them. When we're meditating, the mind is calm, much calmer than usual, so we can see things in a lot more depth and also at a different angle. So sometimes in meditation things will come up and we think, oh, that's unusual. And if we review it later, we may see it in a different light. It may give us more information. It may give us an insight into, say, impermanence or the fact that we're connected with everyone, everything else. It may be many different things we can see in the meditation. So this can be very useful at the end of the meditation, and I always end the meditation with sharing the energy of the meditation with family and friends, with all beings, because this is important. Some people might think that's just an optional extra, but it's very, very good, because it gives us the sense that what we're doing is important, one thing, and secondly, that we can share it with other beings, with other people. And I know many people might think, well, how can you share, you know, the energy of a meditation with other people? You know, it's just, it's mental, it's mind stuff. Hmm. But I think all of us have had the experiences of, you know, walking into a room and meeting somebody who's very happy, and they don't even need to say anything, you just can feel it. Or even easier actually is someone who's really angry. You can pick it up pretty quickly, I can anyway. And various other mental states, you can pick these up. So our minds do affect others, and we can be aware of these things. And the important thing with meditation is when the mind becomes very one-pointed, very peaceful, very still, it's also very powerful. And then it's possible, more possible, to affect others at a distance. You know, for instance, sending metta or sharing metta. Sharing metta, if that's okay, with other beings and with other people. You can bring them to mind. And I've had these experiences myself where I've been, experienced someone sending metta to me from a distance, and it's been incredibly powerful. So our minds do affect others. And of course, as I said, the degree to which that can be the case is depends upon the strength of the mind, the stillness of the mind, the calmness of the mind. So those things, the one-pointedness of the mind, can bring quite a lot of power and strength. And the other side to this is that when the mind is like that, this is where wisdom can really take off. Because a mind that is very powerful, very still, very, you don't like to say focused, very steady, can really do amazing things. We are not used to the sort of qualities that a mind like that can do. You can ask it to do anything, and it can remember past lives. It can do all manner of things that we can't normally do, because this is a very powerful mind. So, if anybody gets that this evening, very good. If you just enjoy the light, and more, probably even more important, just stay awake. That's good. Though I never poo-poo people falling asleep too, because I think at least they're relaxed. They're not tense, you know. They're unwinding. So now it's time for the meditation, and just a bit of water. Ah, thank you. That's quite good, actually. I'm shorty. So if we can find a posture that is comfortable and fairly upright but relaxed, this is quite important. And to adjust the body, the legs, especially the shoulders, the neck. And to close the eyes. And we can rest the hands as we find comfortable on the lap, on the legs, whatever. And just for a moment, we reflect on our intention for this evening. Just to be here, perhaps. Just to know what's happening clearly. To be interested, whatever intention we have. And we come into the present moment, and we can let go of the past and the future. We can turn the phone off of the past, turn the phone off of the future, and leave them at the door with the shoes. We're just free in the present moment. Just enjoying whatever is happening, sounds, feeling of the coolness, the air conditioning, feelings in the body, whatever we notice, saliva in the mouth, just enjoying not having to do anything. I'm not having to go anywhere. We're just here, free in the present moment. Thank you. just appreciating being here now. Now we can bring our attention to the body, to the top of the head, and the back and the sides of the head. Just aware of any feelings, any sensations. Whether it's itching, warmth, tingling, whatever we notice, pressure. And allowing it to relax. And moving the attention down through the forehead and around the eyes. And being aware of that area. Noticing what there is happening. And relaxing that area. And we move the attention to the cheeks and around the mouth and the chin. Just see what sensations, what feelings are occurring. And we relax that area. And now we move the attention down to the neck, all around the neck. Noticing how the neck is, what's happening, what's going on. What sensations or feelings there may be, or what, if there is none, we know that. And we move the attention to the right shoulder and experience the right shoulder as it is now. Whatever feelings, maybe this. Some hardness, soreness, whatever, we notice. And we allow it to be. And we move the attention down the right arm, moving it all around, the attention all around the right arm, moving down towards the elbow. Experiencing the elbow. And moving the attention down the lower right arm. To the wrist, knowing all around the wrist. And becoming aware of the palm of the hand. And the top of the hand. Maybe there's clamminess, warmth. And we move the attention to the base of the fingers and move up the fingers to the tips of the fingers and then out into the room, letting go of any soreness, any tiredness. Relaxing the right shoulder and the right arm, letting it be. And now we bring our attention to the left shoulder and notice how the left shoulder is. it to relax, to settle down, to be comfortable. Bringing the attention to the left upper arm, all around, moving it, the attention down to the left elbow, all around the left elbow, the lower arm to the left wrist. Noticing whatever there is to notice. And paying attention to the palm of the left hand and the upper part of the left hand. And moving the attention from the base of the fingers up to the tips of the fingers and out into the room, just letting go, relaxing left shoulder and left arm. And now we pay attention to the back, moving down from below the shoulders, slowly down the back, becoming aware of area after area, just noticing what there is to notice. Any hardness, stiffness, contact with the chair, contact with the clothes, whatever there is, moving down. The waist and then down to the buttocks, to the top of the legs. And we bring our attention to the front of the body, to below the shoulders, and move the attention down the chest, experiencing area after area. Maybe pressure, hardness, softness, warmth, coolness, whatever. Movement. Moving the attention down to the area of the stomach and down the abdomen to the top of the legs. Attention down the right leg, down the thigh, all around the thigh, experiencing whatever there is to experience. Moving down to the right knee, all around, noticing. Down the right lower leg to the ankle. Noticing pulsing, itching, tingling, whatever. And then we pay attention to the top of the foot and the sole of the foot, noticing them, and the heel of the foot. And moving the attention from the base of the toes right up to the tips of the toes, and then out into the room, relaxing the right leg, letting go any stiffness, tiredness, negativity. And we bring the attention to the left leg, starting at the top of the leg, moving down the thigh, towards the knee, all around the knee. And down the right, left lower leg to the ankle, the left ankle. Noticing what there is to notice. Bringing the attention to the heel of the left foot, the sole of the left foot, and the upper part of the left foot. And then moving the attention up the toes of the left foot to the tips of the toes, and then out into the room. Letting go, relaxing the left leg, letting go of any negativity. And we become aware of the whole body sitting, just being sitting with the body as it is. Noticing maybe the heaviness, the relaxed state, whatever. We can bring to mind a beautiful jewel, maybe a diamond or whatever stone, lots of facets, which are sparkling, brilliant, pure, clear, radiant, luminous. Just shining and flashing. This jewel is within us, and it fills the whole of the mind with this light, clarity, purity, and brings joy and peace. Banishes, it removes the darkness of anxiety, depression, all the negative states of mind, jealousy, envy, anger, irritation, all the darkness gone from the mind. Just filling us, the whole of the mind, with light and brightness of this jewel. this life fills our body from head, moving down the body, healing and relaxing the body, this light. Filling the body from head to toe with light and healing, clarity, all the way to the toes. Just full of this beautiful, brilliant light, purity, clarity. And now we notice breath coming in and going out. And as we breathe in light. And as we can breathe out light to the world. Breathing in light and breathing out light, paying attention to the breath coming and going. And if the mind wanders off, we remember the light coming in with a breath and going out with a breath, and come back to that. and we pay attention to as much of the breath as we can, with this light coming in from the beginning of the in-breath to the middle of the in-breath to the end of the in-breath to the gap, and then to the breath going out, slowly going out to the beginning, middle and end, noticing as much as we can of the breath coming in and going out, this brilliant, radiant, luminous light. We can become aware of the whole body filled with this light, shining, luminous, brilliant, radiant, through the whole body. Now we're coming close to the end of the meditation, so we can just check out and see how am I feeling now. And to see what stood out during the meditation, what we learned from the meditation. and we can now we can think of sharing this energy of meditation with all our family and friends, whether they're here or not, and with all beings wherever they are, here and wherever. May they experience this brilliant light, the jewel of the mind, the peace, the clarity, the joy of that light. May it bring them happiness and well-being. And we can slowly open the eyes and move the body to make ourselves more comfortable. Now I'd just like to ask if there are any comments or questions people have. I don't know if there's some written. Are there any written ones? Or? It's usually written is quite a good way. People don't feel so shy. And also after meditation, often people don't have any questions.
With groups that are 60 people.
Yeah, 60 people.
If we embarked on a mission to start with, saying we're going to put all this energy into a particular subject, if it organized beforehand, like Yandu or somewhere like that.
Oh, all right.
You know, right, you know what I mean?
Yes, yes.
Does that happen?
The idea is if we as a group put all our energy, focused it on a particular situation, will that happen? Will that help?
Yeah,
I think that's what you mean.
Do meditation groups do that?
Perhaps some do, and I think it's a useful can be a useful exercise, because if we focus on the people that are in a difficult situation, it brings up compassion for us. This is a wholesome state of mind for us, and if we can develop it in a very strong way, we can share that compassion, that energy, that support with those people and the other people. And if it were in a group, that could even be stronger. But it really depends on the state of the person, of the minds that are sending that compassion. But the first thing, we should benefit from it. We should develop compassion, wholesome qualities in our mind, and then we can share that with others. So it is possible that one could do that. But one person with just enough single-pointedness, with enough strength of mind, they could send out incredible amount. Like a Buddha, for instance, could send out, megawatts of compassion, of loving kindness. So it really doesn't matter about the number, but just the quality is really the important thing if we want to have an effect. And there is, of course, that wonderful story of the Buddha when he, towards the end of his life, his cousin, another monk called Venerable Devadatta, he wanted to take over the monks, the Sangha as we call it, and he offered, and the Buddha turned him down because he didn't have the qualities really to do that, nor did the Buddha think of himself as the controller of this group. He never thought like that. It's quite interesting. And so, because he was very annoyed with the Buddha, he tried a number of times to kill him. And on one occasion, I know it's pretty amazing, isn't it? And on one occasion, he had this plot where he was a friend of the king. The king was very impressed with this monk because he had psychic powers. He could fly through the air. He could appear in different beings. You know, he appeared once as a young Brahmin boy before the king. People are very impressed by psychic powers, even today. The Buddha, of course, said that these are not the point, actually. These are byproducts, but not the point of what he is teaching, actually. So he had this plot that the king allowed him to do this. He had these men to give one of the royal elephants a lot of alcohol. They would beat it, get it really enraged. And then in the morning, when the Buddha was coming into the city, on arms around, every day the monks would come into the city and collect their food in the bowls. And he was coming down the street towards the royal stables. And then they opened the doors, and this elephant, of course, absolutely enraged, you know, mad, charged out towards the Buddha. And his attendant, who looked after him for the last 25 years of his life, Venerable Ananda, stood in front of the Buddha. But the Buddha said, "No need, no need, Ananda." And this elephant charged towards him, Nalagiri, that's his name, Nalagiri. And the Buddha sent out his metta, his loving kindness, his compassion. And the elephant slowed down, and came up to the Buddha, and then bowed down to the Buddha. The Buddha touched him and completely, you know, quelled all that anger, all that rage, all that anger, all that drunkenness, for that matter. So this is an example of, you know, a very tangible example. It must have been incredibly impressive for everyone who experienced it, actually. Just the power of one person with an incredibly strong, peaceful, one-pointed mind, you know, that he could do this. So maybe if we can reach, you know, that degree of peace and stillness, it's possible. We can share compassion like that. We can share loving kindness like that. But, you know, you see, don't you? I mean, just the power of some of these individual monks and nuns that taught. You know, the Buddha was one of them. But in our lifetime, you know, Ajahn Chah, he was a Thai monk, just brought up in rural Thailand, in the northeast of Thailand, very, very, you know, backward sort of place, not much education. And yet he had an enormous effect, you know, through his compassion, through his wisdom as well. And the tradition I come from is quite large now because of this one monk and his compassion, his loving kindness. So, yes, it is possible. Yes?
Did Ajahn Chah literally sit amongst snakes and they didn't bother him?
Did Ajahn Chah literally sit amongst snakes and they didn't bother him? I don't recall hearing that about Ajahn Chah, but I've heard that with other monks. Yeah, there are some famous examples of other monks I think it's his nephew is related to him, a monk called Ajahn Gunha. He evidently patted cobras, these very large king cobras, very big snakes, you know. And I've heard of, I know one monk who used to live here at the monastery. He was meditating one time, and he opened his eyes, and this snake, this cobra, had come up and was looking at him in the eyes. And he just, you know, well, of course, to begin with, I think he was probably, well, what to do? But he did this chant of loving kindness. It's called the Kanda Paritta, which the Buddha taught, actually, specifically for snakes, actually. And he did the chant, and the snake went down, and then calmly went off. And I've experienced this too, because I was living in Sri Lanka, and I came back to the hut that I was living in and had a walking path. And at the end of the walking path, it was covered walking path, there was a meditation seat. And I saw the tail of a snake go over the seat, and I thought, oh, it's a rat snake. These are harmless, but quite impressive looking snakes. And I thought, oh, it's a rat snake. So I opened the back door, and I got the broom, and I thought I was nudging it to go out. And then I heard this hiss, hiss. I thought, well, this is not a rat snake. It doesn't carry on like this. I looked under, it was a cobra, quite a big cobra. And I was really quite, you know, I thought, oh, what to do. So anyway, I stood back, and I chanted this Kanda Paritta one time. And then I settled down, I chanted it a second time. The snake settled down too. And then he quietly went out the back door. So it was, there are these encounters with snakes. And the chief monk there said, oh, you shouldn't have worried. Just left the door open, he'd go out by himself.
A
back. No worries.
Did they still have the issue with the elephants in the kitchen and the dining hall?
Oh, right. Not so much now, because last year is 2015. 2014, I spent the Rains Retreat, we call it, and this is from July to the end of July to the end of October. I spent longer there at this monastery. But this monastery had a dining hall that was very open, and an elephant, this lone elephant would come in at night and go. They had big metal cupboards, three metal cupboards, and it opened the first one, got all the fruit and veggies out, ate those, and then crushed it. It was incredible. It was flattened like a car accident, actually. It was just like head on. It crushed that. And over the next couple of weeks, it came back at night and destroyed all the other cupboards as well. And we'd come in the morning, and there'd be oil all over the floor, coconut oil or milk powder everywhere, and all this sort of thing. And we'd just have breakfast and then clean up. But yes, we do have these elephants, wild animals coming. And of course, the best thing is metta. But they used a lot of firecrackers for this one. But it didn't deter him, I can tell you that. But they, after that rains retreat, they built in the walls a lot more, and they built the doors, and they put mesh on the doors, so he can't come in. He did come and try and break in, and did a little bit of damage to one door, but not much. So when you live in the forest, you get lots of lessons from animals and wildlife in general, but it also teaches us how important our state of mind is too. So to have loving kindness, compassion, understanding, actually, when we encounter these situations. So, yes, this is a good thing of living in the forest, many, many wild animals. Yes. So thank you for that. Yes.
I just have a question about selecting which meditation to do. So you've introduced, I don't think ever have I heard done a white light meditation in this group.
No.
And we have metta, and we have breath, and we have bodhisattva. Is there something that could guide us as to know which one we need to do, or do we do one for a year, or could you just, especially for people who've not heard about different ones before?
Well, the first thing we have to be aware of is just the state of our minds, you know, what we need for a particular meditation. The interesting thing is that if you have a favorite meditation, you'll notice this actually, that or favorite technique, if you use it over and over again, maybe it works sometimes, maybe it doesn't. And the reason it doesn't work sometimes is the mind needs something else. So when we sit down to meditation, it's good to see what we need. If the mind has, if there's this irritation, annoyance in it, maybe loving kindness is good. And often to start loving kindness, as I said, the idea of a best friend is great. That can allow us to, because usually with our best friends, that there's a feeling, quite a strong feeling, and that cuts through this irritation and negativity. Then we can use that feeling for loving kindness for ourselves. We're the one suffering. We're the one with irritation, annoyance, upset, jealousy, envy, whatever it is. So we can do that. But the other things that a very, very effective way I find actually is to focus on what we're grateful for, what we're thankful for, to whom you might bring to mind someone, there's always someone for us, to whom we feel a lot of gratitude, a lot of thanks for what they've done for us, what they said to us, how they helped us, maybe at a difficult time in our lives. And when you have this person in mind, then it's very, it may be a teacher, it may be a friend, it may be a family member, very easy to develop loving kindness and to cut through that negativity. So that can be very useful too. The body scanning is also very good for grounding us in the present moment. And you may find sometimes that's good to do, you know, just to, it's quite a very, it's good for healing. It can be very peaceful, and you just go through the body from the head to the feet and then come back up. And not as much detail as I did this evening. You know, you go through reasonably, not too fast. You go through as fast as you need to, actually. And this can be very useful, too. So you just see what the mind needs at any given time. You know, there are many different meditations in the Buddha teaches, so you can use any of these at different times. You know, some of the meditation recollections the Buddha recommended too was like just thinking of our generosity, our kindness, you know, to other people, the things that we've done for them. Maybe it's a material generosity, kindness, but it can also be, you know, non-material things, immaterial things like our time. This is something that people don't have much of and they appreciate these days. Very much attention, listening, help of any sort, you know, when somebody's sick, these sorts of things. So when we recollect that, when we think of that, it can bring up a lot of positive energy. You know, you realize, I've done quite a bit. If you find it difficult to do that, just to think from, I often use this, just think, what have I done today? You know, what kind thing have I said? What have I done that, you know, has... that I feel happy about, that I feel, you know, was a good thing to do, you know. And then that can give you energy. You can go, then you can go back further, maybe a few days, a week, and so on. And that can be a way of developing energy. Ajahn Brahm, whom I'm sure most of you know, he uses that a lot because he does a lot of good things and helps a lot of people. So that gives him energy for the meditation. Because when we start the meditation, the most important thing to overcome is the five hindrances, we call them, but it's basically the negativities of the mind. You know, the mind that is preoccupied with all the things in the world that it likes, or the mind that is preoccupied with all the things in the world it doesn't like. You know, there are many things. Or the mind that's very tired and drowsy, dull, zombie-like. And then the mind that's totally restless, can't stay still, and the mind that's regretting what we've done and said, keeps going over it again and again, just can't be still. Or the mind that has a lot of doubt about ourselves, our ability to meditate, the techniques we're using, those sorts of things. So these sorts of methods, you know, thinking of gratitude, thinking of the things we've done, the good things we've done or said, can help cut through that. And also we can also think of the fact in Buddhism there's a big emphasis on our ethical behavior of body and speech, and this can be, the Buddha taught this as a recollection that we can develop happiness from too, the fact that, you know, we're not killing living beings, we're not harming them deliberately. Of course sometimes people will step on ants and so on, or kill mosquitoes and flies accidentally, that we're not taking other people's things, we're not stealing, we're not taking their partners, no sexual misconduct, that we're not lying and misleading people, deceiving people. And the last one, the Buddha's five precepts, is not taking alcohol or drugs, which make our minds very cloudy and confuse us about what we do and say. So these five things the Buddha taught as a recollection too. He said, the fact that we do this is a gift to other people, because the society we want to live in, most people want to live in a society where they don't have to feel afraid they're going to be killed or harmed. They don't want to live in a society where they feel they're going to have their property stolen, or they have to protect it day and night and grimly hold on to it. And they don't want to live in a society where they feel their relationships are under threat all the time. And they don't want to live in a society where they cannot trust what other people say. And they don't want to live in a society where people are so out of it, they don't know what they're doing or saying. So this is the sort of society we want to live in. Then we have to have these values. We have to commit ourselves to these values. If we want a society like that, we have to do it. But the Buddha was teaching us that this, if we recollect on the fact that we're not doing these things, then he says we give this enormous, incalculable gift of freedom from anxiety, oppression, worry, all these things. Because people know they can trust. People know they can relax, that they're safe. And so this is a great gift. So this is another thing one can reflect on, the fact that today, or I haven't killed anybody, I haven't stolen these things. And of course, it's always good to take the five precepts formally, but to commit to something like that in your own mind is the most important thing, you know. You don't have to take them from a monk or a nun. You just, if you remember them and go through them and think of these are important things, actually. Because people talk about world peace, but where does it begin? With our actions of body and speech. And these five precepts, if people kept them, this world would be like heaven. It would be absolutely different from what we're experiencing now. The newspapers, the television wouldn't have much to report. So this is a gift of peace that we can give to the world as well as to ourselves. So these various different ways of looking at the beginning of the meditation can change, can cut through the states of mind that we're experiencing. And as I say, that can be very useful for abandoning those five hindrances that I mentioned, the negativities of the mind, and then we're ready to develop the meditation. The Buddha actually said that once the five hindrances are out of the way, then the meditation can go deep, then the wisdom can develop. These are obstacles to both of them. So whatever means brings up wholesome states in the mind, it may be different things for different people. That's very useful at the beginning of the meditation. You know, I hope this evening, with the visualization of this gem and the light, that helped in some way reduce the negativity in the mind, brought more joy, more peace. And also, I think, I always notice, I feel much more alert, alive, more energetic with it. So these are just ways. Whatever way leads to a brightness of mind, wholesomeness of mind, positiveness of mind, then that's useful at the beginning of the meditation. And just see what the mind needs. Sometimes it'll need calming down, won't it? It's revved up enough. So, you know, then to contemplate something very peaceful, just even think of a Buddha statue is very peaceful. I see them in gardens all over the place, actually, everywhere. And so just to contemplate something very peaceful like the Buddha, or to bring to mind a beautiful, tranquil place that you find very peaceful. You know, there are always places, always associations we have. And when we bring that to mind, then the mind starts to take on that quality and it lets go of other stuff. Because when we develop the positive, the wholesome, there's not room for the negative and the dark qualities of the mind. It replaces them. And so this is very useful for the meditation as well. So I hope that was useful. Just one more question, and I think it's nearly half past eight. Yeah.
Are you going to head back to Sri Lanka, or are you sticking around at Bodhinyana?
I will stay for 3 weeks at Bodhinyana, and then I'm going back to Sri Lanka 2nd of February. So,
Coming back?
Yeah, no, I'll be coming back in about 12 months.
No.
He means to teach you next week.
Next week would be
good. Next week, or maybe the week after. Then you have a bit of a variety.
That's
that
called
way.
Greed.
A bit of variety. I don't want to wear out my welcome. That's what I remember. Ajahn Chah was in America. He's a famous meditation teacher from northeast Thailand. He's a teacher of Ajahn Brahm and many other monks and nuns. And in America, they invited him to stay. And he said yes. You know, for a week or two. That'd be wonderful. I was here. He said, a month, you might start to get a little tired. After 2 or 3 months, you might wish, that month, wouldn't you go back to Thailand? So I won't wear out my welcome. So thank you very much for tonight.
Thank you.
I've enjoyed the meditation. And even if you get only some useful ideas from the meditation that work for you at home or wherever, good. I'll be very pleased. So I hope we can meet again and that you get the benefit of group meditation.